Okay, let me find the slides. Can you see the slides?
Yes.
Perfect. It seems that I will not be able to follow the chat so well while, as I'm sharing the screen. So can I ask Sala to help me out if there are some questions? But I hope you will use the chat to present questions or react to some of the things that I'm going to talk about. Okay, thank you so much for reading the article by Temple and Young and sharing your thoughts that the text raised. For me, this article has been one of the most critically important readings that has helped me to think how language is present in all the research that we do. As you remember from the text, the examples were presented from doing research across languages. One of the research was of Polish origin, doing her work in the UK, and the second one had done research with British Sign Language communities. Language is not always as explicitly defined as in these examples, but I think the article managed to show us a deeper meanings of language, and I put together some ideas based on the article and based on your reactions to it. And I sincerely appreciate your commentaries to the text, because it really helped me to think what kind of roles does language play in your thesis work? So I'm trying to talk about things that would be as relevant as possible to your research. Let's start with a little bit of language and language attached to emotions. Could I ask each of you to type up a word describing the feeling that's probably the most prevalent in your mind at the moment? Word describing a feeling. You can use English, but you can also use some other language if you cannot find the right word. But try to find a word that genuinely describes how you feel at the moment.
Personally, I would go with confused.
Confused, yes. I think many of us share that. Okay, I need to go and check on the chat. Overwhelmed, mixed feelings, hämmentynyt, Finnish word, confused, anxious, overwhelmed. Ihan ok, just fine, somewhat vexed, yet happy. Good. Okay. Yeah. Nice. Thank you for sharing this. When I first started reading and hearing the words you are typing in, I was a little concerned, but I see the tone being rather positive, actually. And this is, of course, an important message for me. And if I wasn't too critical, I would assume you are all doing just fine, or most of you are doing just fine, if I chose to take on the optimistic approach, as I would normally do. But of course, knowing the circumstances, I would not want to make such assumptions, and especially generalize. So this is how little words can actually transmit in this kind of a situation, taking this Zoom class as an example. In the article, I just want to confirm if you see only my slides, because I have stuff popping up on my screen right now.
Yeah, I only see your slides.
Excellent. Good, because I see some things covering up the slides. Good. In the article, the two basic epistemological stances that were introduced are both, I'd say, fundamental. And these stances can be found when we talk about the theory of science in general, and how we actually perceive the world, and the role of language. The first one refers to the objectivist paradigm, where we as researchers attempt to be as objective as possible in all circumstances. And if we start looking at language from this position, elimination of bias obviously becomes the central concern. We're trying to find a strategies that take us somehow beyond the incompleteness of language. We're trying to develop objective measures, standardized questionnaires. We're trying to use language that leaves very little space for alternative interpretations. And this is the path we're taking if we look at language in that way. And the other extreme is what many of us would call a social constructivist position, where we fully acknowledge that we only exist through social interactions. The world is socially constructed, and our location in this structure influences who we are. And I'm not saying we should choose one of these, but rather I'm encouraging us to think, how do we position ourselves in the research that we are doing? If we go to the social constructivist side, we need to be quite serious about the limitations that language has, and especially if we are working across several languages. And then again, if we aim for some more objectivity or generalizability, then we should really pay attention to the kind of language that we choose to use, and probably triangulate to find validity to what we are studying. So I would rather see this as a continuum, and each individual research project can position themselves in a different place in this continuum. So it's not something that is fixed and something that we will follow throughout our work. But it is a fundamental question to think about in every research that we embark on. How does language influence our positionality? Besides these fundamental epistemological questions, we can ask also very practical questions related to language. We could all spend a few moments to think of our own linguistic backgrounds, and particularly the role of English, which is now our commonly agreed medium of communication, and it's the language where you are supposed to report your research on. Think, what is your first language? Whether English is the first, second, third, even fourth for some of you probably. Think of the people you're doing your research on or with. Have you already chosen the language for your data collection work? What does it mean? What does your choice mean to the participants? Can they use their first language? Do they use their professional language? Or do they use a language that they only know as a foreign language and they are not too familiar with? All of these options are okay, but it's just something to be aware of. And it's something that should influence your research question.
Okay.
And the type of analysis you are doing. Then again, as international students studying in an English medium program in Finland, puts you in a certain kind of position. You are somehow a mediator of contexts and languages. We're working in a Finnish university. Most of your instructors are native Finnish speakers, but we are working through English in order to have this program. So that obviously gives me a very specific position. And then again, we have different roles related to language throughout the research process. There's always some translation involved. Sometimes we are more researchers, but also doing the translations. Sometimes, in some situations, we actually are mainly translators. If we are translating our data, or if we are helping a fellow students in the data collection. And then the insider-outsider position is also very much attached to language. To which discourses do I have access to, and where I have to accept my outsider position, and how does that influence my work? I'd next like you to take this to a very concrete discussion for a few minutes in small groups. One will soon divide you in groups of three randomly, and I'd ask you to think about these five questions. So just that you can simply now take a few moments by yourself and list the languages that you use to think about your research, to explain it to your peers, supervisors, your research participants. There could be many languages already. What is the language for your data collection? What's the language you use to write up the results? I suppose that's English for all of you. And which languages do you use to communicate your results to your intended audiences? Some of you had already thought about these audiences in the pre-assignment. So make a list of languages, and then the most interesting question was raised by one of you who was reflecting on how different it is to use these different languages. How do you feel when you are speaking in your mother tongue? How is it to communicate through English? And so on and so forth. So spend a couple of minutes thinking through this on your own, and then Panu will divide you in groups of three. Okay, I think we are ready to go into the groups. Would somebody like to share some of the key points that you discussed in your groups?
Yeah, I think my group, we had an interesting discussion because both me and Clara are going to be like doing interviews / workshops / just direct contact with people of various like cultural backgrounds. So the English level is going to be like a variety. Like it's not going to be, everyone's going to be at the same level. But then Eugenia was talking about how language is most likely probably not going to affect hers because she's doing like more like neuroscience type of stuff. So it was quite interesting discussion.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it.
The kind of research we do definitely makes a huge difference here. Yeah. But I'm still insisting to argue that language does play a role in each of our work. And it actually plays a very important role. It might not be so visible in your data collection, but it definitely makes a difference in our thinking, let's say.
Yeah, one point that we discussed and I find relevant is that most of us have data collection in different languages than English, like our own mother tongues or the language back home. And sometimes it's hard to translate. Like what you got, the information that you get out of interviews, it's hard to translate it into English or the language that you're communicating your thesis results in. So that was one thing that we discussed, like things get lost into translation.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I have a few references in my slides to probably point you towards some discussion around this. When I supervise research, I always think it's amazing for the students if he or she can use one's first language in the data collection and analysis. And as a supervisor, I just ask questions around the instruments, and I ask the student to keep good records of the practical steps taken and the steps of the analysis process. And I think the translation to English only happens at a very late stage of the research. In the text, Temple and Young talked about domestication of research to written English, and I think it's a good notion to keep on mind. When do we domesticate the research? I hope many of you have realized how differently you think through different languages, and if you are in a position to use your own language in your research, I think it is a great advantage. So I hope you can respect that intellectual opportunity and analytical opportunity and do the analysis in the same language that you collected the data. And then there are other designs where we don't have that opportunity. And then we need to look at the data and the whole analytical process quite differently. I have, for example, worked through Kiswahili language when I was doing my research in Tanzania. And I very soon had to realize how limited access I had through words that were transmitted through a translator. So I think this is one of the my fundamental experiences that has really made me to think how to go beyond words and how to somehow find the personal and cultural meanings that are attached to languages. So I'll be talking about some of those techniques a little later. In our breakdown group, we talked about languages getting mixed up in our work. And I think this is perfectly understandable. Your first language probably intervenes in some of your thinking, and you know, without thinking, you realize you are making notes in your first language when you are reading a text that's written in another language. And I think that's perfectly fine. I think in this process, we should think of language more as a tool, and appreciate the possibility of having more than one tools available at times. So I wouldn't be afraid of taking notes in different languages or writing in one language and having my supervisor comment on another language if you both have the two languages in common. So the final report will have to be written in one language, but do use the whole linguistic repertoire that you have to get to the deepest possible level of analysis in your work. For example, when I'm supervising the thesis work of Finnish speaking students who are writing in English, I always say they are more than welcome to send me texts that mix the two languages, or if they have written in English, they can include a comment and a question in Finnish, and then I can respond to that in either language. So at least for me personally, I really don't mind seeing several languages even in the drafts that I receive. But this is something that's probably quite polite to ask from your supervisor and the other people you are working with. Okay, let's move on. Here. So translation, as Temple and Young also emphasized, it's always present in research. Sometimes it's really visible. I mean, we are translating a questionnaire from English to Korean language, for example. That's a technical, concrete act of translation that's present. But there's always more, many other processes present. There's some sort of code switching happening. There can also be a translation of artwork to words, or even spoken language to transcriptions. That's also an act of translation. So let's look at language again as a multidimensional context.
I'm sorry, but we cannot see your slides.
Really? Thank you for... let me try again.
Reminder for happened. Everybody, please do tell this for the lectures from time to time, because if we are going in Zoom for breakout rooms, it will sort of break out all existing. So you have to turn your microphone on, and we'll have to start sharing again, and so on and so on. So
okay,
just begin the sharing again. So sorry,
thank you.
Remembering to remind about this.
Yeah. It's okay. Now I just need to get back to the slideshow that's somehow hidden. Oh, here. Yeah, okay. Are we back?
Yes.
Yes, okay, perfect. This is what I was talking through during the couple of last minutes. So again, to remind you, that's just like language, also translation is present in all research. Sometimes it's technical, explicit, something that requires money, for example. You need to hire someone to get translations done. But we all keep translating. We are translating and interpreting, for example, cultures. We are transforming spoken words into written text, and thus probably losing some of the meanings. The arrow in the bottom of the slides is again a kind of a continuum of the amount of translation that's required in different types of research. The second point about translating at least parts of your data in English is something that you will need to really pay attention to. It comes back to the issue of domestication. If you do your whole analysis in the language that you conducted your data collection on, it's perfectly fine. You will probably reach a higher level of analysis that way. So it's only at the very end, when you choose the, let's say, citations from interviews that you actually want to include in your final report. And it's only then when you translate those parts. And I think this is the most common practice, let's say, in interview research. You don't translate the transcripts, but you only translate the little parts of the data that are present in your final report. And then on the right side, on the other extreme, are the kinds of research that you actually do relying on other people's linguistic skills. You want to study, let's say, a group of people whose language you don't know. And then you would be fully relying on someone else. And obviously, in master's thesis work, this is not the most recommendable approach, because it's hard for you to stay in control of the process if a lot of the practical data collection work is done through a language that you don't know. So for example, I would advise against conducting full interviews with a translator if you don't have any idea of the language of the interviews. If you have some understanding of the language, let's say your level of Finnish is reasonable and you want to interviews with Finnish children, you might be okay working with a translator. But these are the discussions you will need to have with your supervisors individually. When you work with someone who has better access to the language or the cultural context of your study, there are these questions related to defining the roles and the boundaries. I remember in one of your assignments, you had really thought about this. If you are working with a translator, how can you make sure that you are still the owner of the process? Then, of course, the type of data that's being translated makes a big difference here. A technical translation of a questionnaire can be done at the, let's say, at the university. You can have informed colleagues to help you translate the key terms, and so on and so on, so forth. But then again, translation of interviews has a lot more to do with the social and cultural context of the interviewees. So you will need different kind of support in translating interview data. And again, at which points of the research process you work with the translator. I have very powerful experiences of working with colleagues who have served as translators, even in interview studies, and I feel that has genuinely enhanced the quality of the work if you sort of accept to share it with the person you are doing the data collection with. So I would encourage you to think of whom to work with and how to best access the different languages that are present in your work. But of course, it's your own thesis and you have to fully understand what has been going on in your research context. And then to finalize with a few more philosophical or theoretical points. As Temple and Young kept emphasizing in their text, this language also is always associated with power. And language, I mean, by essence, it's a dynamic construction. So let's not think of language as something technical, and thereby let's not think of translation as only a technical exercise. Let's think when to domesticate the language to written English. And let's try to avoid tokenistic involvement of participants. For example, by making people use a language they are not comfortable using, or because of the language barrier remaining at a very simplistic level in, let's say, interviewing people. Let's try to find ways to reduce the distance between the researcher and the participants, and respect the genuine experience that the participants do bring in to the work. I think it's becoming evident that language is a major issue influencing the trustworthiness of research. We talked about the trustworthiness in the ethics class from some perspectives. This adds to the previous points probably. As I keep saying, there's no one right or wrong when it comes to taking decisions around language in your work. Again, the trustworthiness is enhanced when we openly discuss the decisions taken during the process and discussing the resulting limitations from our choices. If we if we cannot do extensive in-depth interviews, let's be open about it. Let's say, okay, the kind of interviews we did were very brief, rather technical, and they only allow for descriptive analysis. We can use several methods together to respond to the research questions. We can try to think of ways of reaching the level that's beyond the actual language that we have chosen to use, or we are forced to use. Some technical advice related to trustworthiness. Pilot testing instruments makes a big difference here. I mean, it's a general trustworthiness issue, but especially in language. I have seen so many students who have developed their interview guides going to do the interview and realizing they will need to change a lot of the terms they are using. This can help you a great deal. If you have someone who knows the language of your data, try to work together to co-interpret the data. At least have someone verify your translations. And if possible, try to do member checks. Invite the participants to read, for example, interview transcripts, or at least share the citations that you are using from them in the final report. That can verify your own analysis and the translations. A couple of thoughts about the use of the so-called local languages. You are doing your research in a Finnish university, you are publishing it in English, but if your research context is a non-Finnish, non-English context, don't hesitate to use local references. Obviously, local statistics, policy documents, and so on, but also references to local research. If you have access to good references in other languages, do use them bravely. And just make sure that in the list of references, you translate the main title of the reference in English, so the evaluators and other readers can follow what kind of references you have used. But don't be shy to bring in references in different languages. Here's one example of a Finnish article that has been used in one of my papers. And I've just included the title in square brackets in the list of references. And the International Journal did not have a problem with this kind of reference. Here's a few ideas for getting around or beyond words. In my research, I have used the method of empathy-based stories, where people write short texts about a given topic. It's it's sort of a non-active role playing where you empathize with a person or a situation and you write about it. Narrative approaches can help us reach the culturally and contextually bound meanings given to certain issues. So this is one option. I'm sharing another paper where I have used a voice-centered relational approach to analyzing interview data. So instead of only focusing on the content of what the interviewers were saying, I was paying attention to the way they positioned themselves in their talk and how they positioned themselves within the societies they lived in. So I was sort of trying to reach beyond the immediate responses and to go and ask the data on how is this person talking about herself, for example, what kind of interpretations I can make of her sense of agency based on what she is saying. And then there's a lot of visual art-based methods that can be used together with more verbal methods. For example, one of my students was studying children with learning difficulties. He first asked the students to draw pictures of themselves as learners. And then the children brought in the drawings to the interview situation, and the drawings provided an orientation to the interview questions. And that beautifully brought in a more diverse understanding of the topic than the interview would have done alone. So these are just some suggestions, and I encourage you to think of a creative design for your research and to see if there's something you could add to the verbal data that could help you see somehow beyond what is being said or what is being written. And working with others often helps us to enhance our understanding. As I gave the example of the drawings, if the data collection was only based on the children's drawings, the researcher might have been in trouble trying to interpret the drawings of these children. But when he combined it with the interviews, it provided a participatory space to discuss issues related to learning difficulties. So sometimes working together with people on the analysis brings a lot of value. Okay, this is all I had. Here's a few references that I can recommend, and if there are issues that you would like to discuss further with me, please feel free to send me an email and we can talk more about your individual questions. I would like to ask you to give some sort of a reaction to some of these issues. Can I ask you to type up some comments on the chat, or if some of you wants to ask questions, feel free to do so right now. Is everyone asleep by now? Did I talk too much and too slowly?
No. Did you want us to like write a question or just write like a comment about the lecture?
Either or.
Okay.
Yes. Feel free to ask questions.
So about the member checks, from strategies to enhance trustworthiness. If I remember correctly, that then member checks means that you invite participants to read and correct the data that you collected.
Mm-hmm.
Is it right?
Yes.
So then it means that, for example, if I conduct an interview in Korean, which is my mother tongue and probably the mother tongue of my participants,
mm-hmm.
then I would show the transcript of the interview and show it to them.
Yes.
I mean in that way. Okay.
That's one simple technique. Of course, you need to think when to do it. I mean, depends whom you are studying, but let's say if you are doing interviews with some teachers who are very passionate about the topic of your research, I would expect them to be quite interested to actually read through your transcript.
Then it's a simple question, but like, what if they say that, yeah, but I said, it's true that I said like this, but now I want to change what I said, then what happens?
Yes, you have to acknowledge this. And this is actually part of the process of negotiating the consent with your participants, especially if they say, I don't want this part of the interview to be used for the analysis, then you just need to remove it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hi.
And it has happened. I mean, people, you might be surprised how people actually open up in the interviews. And later on, they might regret having said some of the things they have said. And we need to respect them. Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, I have a practical question. If I need some translation support from Finnish to English, can I get any support from our university?
I don't think there's a very straightforward answer to this. I would say getting any funding from the university to translation is difficult unless you work as part of a research project. So this is definitely something you need to bring up to the attention of your supervisor as soon as possible if there are some financial requirements. But in general, we have very little support available for translations.
Thank you for your answers.
Yeah.
I would like to ask about protecting participants' anonymity. For example, if there was a case where you need the translator to work on with the whole interview of some participant, and then there would be some personal details you would as a researcher exclude, but now you should show it all to the translator. How is this thing?
are you referring, for example, to interview transcripts?
Yeah.
So that your responsibility as a researcher is to anonymize the transcripts before you give them to the translator. You remove the personal details from the beginning and you give a number or a pseudonym to the interviewee.
That's right. Thanks.
Yes. Of course, if you work it with a translator or an interpreter in the interview situation, then you both are tied by the consent that's given by the participants.
Yes.
But if it's done later, you remove all the personal details.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me see the questions here. Aaron is adding one reference. perfect. Let's take a note of that. Yes, any sense making in art is a form of translation. Always. Good. Someone has got some useful tips. Yeah, thank you. Question. Do we need to use a certified translator, or can we do it by ourselves or with the help of people we know? A very good question. I think, especially in qualitative work, we should really work with people who understand our research context and who understand the field. So here, certifications matter a lot less than knowledge of the context and the academic field. It's very common that students work together with supervisors on the translation, or there's another colleague who verifies transcripts by kindly listening the audios or part of the audios and verifying the transcripts. So here we need collegial support from each other. And as an advice to you, if you already anticipate to have several processes of translation and time-taking processes ahead of you, do make sure you find people who are willing to work with you on the topic. If you are doing the work back in your home country, you could think of ways that would encourage your colleagues to work together. For example, you could agree to write an article together to a local professional journal based on the research. That would then give an opportunity for the other person to also publish something based on the work you are doing. Think of what would motivate people to work with you. Serving as a peer research assistant is always a rewarding experience, and I hope you can offer your help to the others as well. For example, if one of you is video recording some group sessions, please do and offer your help in managing the technical setup so the other person can focus on the interviews, and you will learn a great deal about interviewing by just, you know, handling the camera for your friend. It's really useful to participate in each other's data collection work, and it is so helpful to have someone together with you when you are going, let's say, if you are going to do data collection in the schools, to bring someone along and then return the favor later. Okay. Is there still something on your mind? If not, let me wrap up this topic, and then we can open the discussion to general discussion, general questions around the thesis work. Now, this is the final session of the first research seminar, and you'll be breaking out to work with your supervisors soon. So we'd like to hear about some general questions and concerns related to the next steps in your thesis process. And I hope Panu and Salla are here to respond to the questions as well.
Yes, we are. We are here too. So if you have any questions about the process itself or anything at all on your mind at the moment related to research and your thesis. So now it's a good time to discuss those questions.
I log on to the model to see if there's more questions there.
There's a question Aaron is asking about the template for writing a journal article type thesis. Those are being translated at the moment. So we don't have the template for that yet. Hopefully in May. I don't know if Hannah has any more information about the timetable of the translation.
Before summer holidays.
Okay.
Is the agreement.
Okay.
Yeah, it's quite a lot of work for the language services, but they are working on it.
Yeah. And I also had a question about that actually. Like in case we want to do an article, a journal article type of thesis, do we discuss that with the supervisor or should you also be informed? Because I was thinking about it.
Yes, that is the discussion you should have with the supervisor, definitely.
Mm-hmm. It is still rather new in our faculty, especially in education. So if you embark on the article format, you are highly likely to be one of the very first that your supervisor is working with. So are prepared to take a role of a guinea pig.
The thing is that, like,
the process,
at least in my case, but I think it will be better to do it in an article because like when it comes to like cognitive neuropsychology and so on, most of the like this and so on generally is done like as an article more than a lengthy.
Yes. Yes. And then you can expect, like, your supervisor to be aware of the differences between the traditional format and the article format. But do ask these questions. I think we need students to challenge the supervisors to look into this option more often. The traditional thesis format is within the comfort zone, and pushing us beyond that is a big favor you can do.
There's also a question about time. So what can we do if we need more time? I'm assuming this means that needing more time for the whole thesis process, if considering the 2 years time of the program. Is that correct? Yes. The 2 years is set for the program to be kind of the study time or the program time. Then depending on your situation, there are different types of students with the EU students and those who are on scholarships and those who have to pay. So these things you have to consider. But basically, the study right you have for 4 years. So it is possible to extend your study time after that 2 years, if needed, but these certain things you have to consider when thinking about that.
Is Voye online? You have asked a question about permissions for completing a research. I could try to respond to that if you are.
Yes, he's online.
Okay, perfect. You have asked if an interview study with teachers requires specific permissions from the school principal or from the city administration. This depends on the kind of questions you are going to ask. I would say if you are picking, let's say, 10 individual teachers and asking about their professional development, then only asking their individual consent is enough. But if all these teachers come from one school, I think you should start by contacting the principal in the school. So it depends how much your research is attached to the actual practices in the schools. For example, if you want to go and do class observations, then you obviously need the permission from the principal and also from the city's education authorities. But if you are interested in how individual teachers think about certain phenomena, you can approach them as individuals. So it's the distance to the actual school that determines what kind of permissions you need.
Yes, thank you for your answer. My idea would be, for example, nine different teachers from nine different schools. So I wouldn't base everything in one school only.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of what is the phenomena you are?
It would be some I didn't make like details yet, but their opinion about anti cyberbullying strategies. Their schools have.
Okay.
There, may I say just in between that there is the kind of research permission of the city of Jyväskylä that should be asked. To my understanding, the city of Jyväskylä seems to be quite strict on this, that when doing some research in schools, and I also send this to Marit, to your supervisor.
Yes. Yeah. That's why I'm asking, because she sent me those permissions to file in. So okay. I just wanted to double check with you.
Yeah.
And she made that suggestion as well.
Yeah. It seemed after taking some closer look on the city of Jyväskylä's policy on this, we discussed it a bit and we're thinking that it would be good to ask for the permission for this.
Yes, makes sense when your question is attached to the strategies that the schools are using.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And always better to be on the safe side.
Yes.
It doesn't
harm you even if asking the permission sometimes when it wouldn't be exactly necessarily needed. So yes. Better that way than the other way around.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for your answer.
What else?
Oh, there's a question about David Hoffman's slides. Okay, we'll look into that matter. And just to inform you also that Mary Hellstein's lecture from last week is now available in Moodle. The link is there under this research seminar, and there's a path key you just have to put there to access the lecture.
Okay, this question is probably to Salla. When do we submit the research proposal for this course?
Yeah, now I'm unmuted. Basically, the deadline is in May. That is how we have kind of planned and structured the whole process, that you would have enough time then also during next academic year for completing the thesis. But this is something that everyone agrees with their supervisor, kind of the detailed and the exact date when to submit it. So there's not a common date for everyone. So please discuss it with your supervisor. Yes, sometime in May would be a good answer. Can it be the 1st of May or the 31st of May? I would go to quite in the to the end of May, most probably. But please discuss with your supervisor, because depending on if you are planning to do some data collection during the summer and so on. So there might be different timetables for everyone. So getting the credits for this research seminar means submitting the research proposal.
So if you need the credits, make sure you submit it during the month that you need the credits registered for.
Yeah. And there has been some discussion of the research proposal still, that how, what should it be like? And we've been also trying to say that don't panic about it. Like, things change. Research is a process. So you have a plan, and you know, things may still change after that when you go forward with your thesis process. So what you have in your thesis or your research plan is not something that defines the rest of the thesis, like for definitely. So it's a plan, and plans may change.
Have you shared a certain structure?
We have, to some extent. Now I have to think about it. In the autumn, we talked about it. And let me see the master's thesis process is described in Moodle.
I think the guidelines for the proposal is on the first meetings slide for this class. I think back in January, I remember looking, there's I think 4 or 5 slides that have what needs to be there, but there's no actual technical formatting, but it does say what we actually need.
Yeah, there's not a template for that, but it should be there, that what is needed.
I have a suggestion if you have not started yet. I would use the thesis template from the beginning and type in the proposal there. And basically the proposal goes until the methodology chapter. So proposal includes content related to introduction, background literature. It introduces the research questions and the methods. And then you just leave out the results and conclusions blank. And you also include the references in the regular format. Instead of making a different structure for the thesis proposal, I think working on the actual thesis template will help you to see what it will take to get all the way, and do get familiar with the template immediately.
And we also discussed with some students in last Eduma Coffee about the thesis process and considering the current situation too, that summer plans can be a bit unsure at the moment, and internships and so on. So also, if needed, to discuss with your supervisor the possibility to work with your research plan during the summertime still, if that is something that would be needed. So in this situation when everything is a bit unsure and your data collection or what you have thought about how to collect the data, that may also change because of the circumstances. So I would suggest to discuss with your supervisor. That is the best thing to do. How to continue the whole process.
And I think this is a time when we may need to reconsider a very data-driven approach to research, and rather think of doing working on the literature and with the theory while waiting for the data collection. So this is also one option. But I'm sure the time forces us to be very creative also when it comes to research, and really thinking of alternative options.
Any other questions at this point? No questions. I guess. And we are soon also running out of time. So if there are no more questions, I think I'm thanking Hanna for presenting. And hopefully you have got useful information in these seminars, all in all, to continue with your thesis work. And of course, questions and comments are also welcome later on.
Yes, please do stay in touch. And we are always, always happy to support.
Thank you.
Thank you all. I will stop the recording.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.